Hare Krishna. So today we are going to discuss nectar of instruction.
Atyahara Prayasascha.
Prajal Bhavyamagraha.
Jana Sangasta Lolamcha.
Sarve Bhakti Vinashyati.
Okay, so now I'll ask, who should I ask? The first line? Okay, what is the first word of the first line?
Atyahara.
Give me the line.
Atyahara Prayasascha.
Okay. What is the first word of the second line?
Prajal Bhavyamagraha.
Very good. And without looking at the books, what's the first or the third line?
Jana Sangha.
And what's the rest of the line?
Jana Sangha.
And then the fourth line?
Sadhir Bhakti.
Very good. Sadhir Bhakti. Okay, now let's go for word, go word for word. Atyahara means?
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the thing called sandhi or conjunction of words? Mm-hmm. In Sanskrit, the words can be joined together. That is called sandhi. Mm-hmm. Now, the joining of the words follows certain principles. Like ati, the word. This is the two words, ati and ahara. Ati and ahara. And so ati, the word ati is ending with e. And ahara is beginning with a. So when there is an a after e, it becomes Y. Like Ati Ahar became Atyahara. Now Ati means too much, and Ahara means to collect or to eat. So collecting too much is Atyahara. Prayash means endeavor. So, Atyahara, Prayashascha. Then Prajalpa means? Yeah, gossip. Gossip. And Prajalpa then? Niyamagraha. Now, I told about the sandhi. This, here is another sandhi, niyama and agraha, that when there is a or a after an a or a, short a or long a, then it becomes a. So niyama ending with a and agraha. Or niyama agraha. In both cases, it will become niyamagraha. These two words are becoming one with a long a. Sanskrit is actually a very scientific language. And advantage is, once you know the rule, things become easy. Otherwise, it appears to be difficult. Like sometimes it is said that French is actually easier than English. You know why? Although French pronunciations have some complex, E-A-U-X, or A-U-X, is pronounced as O. And E-O-U-X, like, how do you spell Chateauroux?
Chateauroux.
Yeah. So it sounds strange, like A-U-X is, it will be ox. right? But it sounds, it pronounces O. Or E-A-U-X is U, right? Like, but the thing is, once you know the formula, once you know, then all the time the same, there is no no change, there is no alteration, like it will always follow the same. Whereas in English it's different, yeah? Right? No. Right. And like it's completely unpredictable. English is very unpredictable. You have to know the word.
Memorize
it, right? Mm. Like, say, you know, like how do you justify? P-U-T is put, right? But B-U-T?
But.
P-U-T is put, but B-U-T is but.
Knife.
Huh? Yeah, knife. K-N-I-F-E. Mm. So why? It's not knife, but knife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Sanskrit also. Words are, in Hindi also, male and female words. I think French also has male and female words. German has.
And neutral.
German has male, female, neutral. And in Sanskrit also, male, female, and neutral gender. Bengali, no. No. Because with the male, female, the articles will change. The grammar will change. Application of grammar will change. Anyway, the point is that Sanskrit, one thing is that it is tough to learn. But once you have learned the rules, then it's easy. It comes automatically. And ultimately, language is a matter of practice. I found learning French very difficult. But my teacher told, no, French is easy. I wanted to give up. So she said, no, French is easy. She insisted that French is easy. And then she told me, in France, even children speak French. So niyama agraha and niyama agraha. Agraha. Groho means accept. The word groho means accept. Now the prefix a negates it. Agraha means rejection. Accepting and not accepting is groho is grohan or groho is accept and agraha is rejection. Now when there is a suffix, when there is a prefix a, then it means too much desire, wanting it too much, agraha, to be very eager to have that. So to be a niyama agraha means to be too enthusiastic about the rules and regulations. Or niyama agraha, the same, apparently the same word can mean two different things. Like niyama agraha means not at all following the rules and regulations or accepting the rules and regulations. Niyama, niyamag prajalpa, niyamagraha. Then the fifth one is jana sangasya. Jana sangasya means jana sangha means mundane association. And lolam greed. To become too greedy about materialistic things of sense gratification. So these are shadbhi, shat means six. This six, bhakti vinashati. Vinash means
destroy.
So these things will destroy your devotion. So before you enter into devotional practice, watch out for the six destroyers of your devotion. Atyahara also has, this word also has two connotations. Ahar means to eat. Ati means too much and ahar means to eat. Eat too much. Or the word ahar can also mean collect. like Ahoran, like to collect. To collect too much, to possess too much, to accumulate too much. And this leads to prayash, endeavor. We want something. Does everything come so easily in the material nature? Unless you have a lot of good karma. Things are tough in this world. To get things is very difficult. It's a big endeavor to get anything. For animals, just to get some basic food in the forest is so difficult. Can you imagine? Although lion is a very powerful animal, but it has to struggle so much to get some food. It has to wait for the right kind of animal, and then you have to kill the animal. At least for lions, at least it can kill the animal, but there are some other animals that they cannot kill other animals. Like hyena and jackals. They have to wait for the lion's remnants. A lion would kill, the lion would eat, and then when the lion leaves, they will go and have the lion's prasad. So, it's so tough. Life is so difficult in this material nature. And prayash, everything, I mean, even to get the bare minimum is such an endeavor. What to speak of, and over-accumulating. Like I remember once I was in German farm, Mishindakshetra. And it was winter, and the winter gets really cold. I don't know how I ended up in winter. Generally I avoid Europe and American winter. Because it's not a nice place to be in at that time. And especially Mishindakshetra, you know, that year it was such heavy snowfall. There's something like 8 or 9 feet snowfall. And by the side of the road you could see that it was piled up. They moved the ice for the roads to be cleared. But on two sides, you know, a huge pile of snow. And in that snow, I saw one rabbit. I woke up early and was chanting, and I looked out of the window, and I saw a lone rabbit. There was nothing, it's all white everywhere. And the rabbit came out, and there was a tree, and from the tree, the thing was, that one leaf was hanging. Just one leaf, because it's winter, I don't know how that leaf also was there. Well, and the rabbit was endeavoring so much just to get that one leaf. That is how tough survival is in this material nature. Oh, why? What to speak of? Oh, I mean, why rabbit? Consider a man in the middle of a desert. What he wouldn't do to get just a glass of water, or what to speak of a plateful of prasad? And so this is how difficult material nature is. So to collect anything, to accumulate anything, automatically demands a big endeavor. So Prabhupada is pointing out that this atyahar will lead to endeavor. Various kinds of endeavor. And in the name of, and while endeavoring, they make all kinds of cheating people. To get things, they would go to the extent of killing people, cheating people. And Prabhupada is pointing out that they even take to religious practices in order to get some material object. Like, they apparently appear to be religious, but what is their ultimate objective? To get some material benefit. To get some, to accumulate something. So, also this atyahar is causing all kinds of difficulties in the human society. Like a man, the other subhuman species, the lower species of life, they by nature's arrangement, they get their food. And when they get their food, that's all right. They don't think of saving their, saving for future. Sometimes they do. That's another experience I had also in Europe. It was a fall, just before the winter. One day we went out for a walk. And then I saw one squirrel. He got a nut. And he took, he was digging a hole to hide the nut. So saving for future. They know winter is coming. But generally they don't do that. By nature's arrangement, they have, their food is in abundance. If they're vegetarian, if they're herbivorous. Herbivorous animals don't have much problem. The problem is with the carnivorous. Because, why? Because they're actually going against nature. That shows that food, flesh, is not even a natural food for animals. Due to their karmic reactions, they develop this tendency to eat meat. But in normal condition, nature's arrangement, everyone should be herbivorous, vegetarian. And we see that when one is vegetarian, everything becomes so easy. So that shows that it's natural. Like there's plenty of leaves. For animals, what do they need? Leaves, and roots, branches. And if they get fruits and nuts, it's a feast for them. But human beings, at least among animals, you get herbivorous and carnivorous. But human beings are omnivorous. They eat all, everything. There is a saying that in China, Tamal Krishna Maharaj once told me, that in China, they eat everything that flies except in the aeroplanes. And everything that floats in water except in a ship. So, and more materialistic people become, the more gross become their food habits. And so, Prabhupada is pointing out how all kinds of problems are due to this over-endeavor for collecting things that are desirable to us. Prabhupada gives the example of keeping a bag of rice in the middle of the road in a deserted place. In the morning some birds will come. They'll eat as much as they need, then they'll fly away. Then some animals will come, like cows and goats and sheep. And they'll eat as much as they need, then they'll go away. But as soon as a man comes, he'll pick up the whole bag and walk. That is the man's nature. He is not satisfied just by getting what he needs. He wants to make arrangements for future. He wants to accumulate. That is atyahar. And the result of atyahar is you try to accumulate for your, not only for yourself, for your for your children, for your grandchildren, for your great grandchildren, for your great 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 grandchildren. But what is the outcome? Prabhupada is giving the example. It is a fact actually. A man, he accumulated so much money for his children. And he gave them a big house and a lot of money, very wealthy man. So he made such wonderful arrangement for him. But in his next life, he was born as a cobbler in the neighborhood. He wanted to be near the house. He wanted to be in the house, but after death, that is not going to, what we want will not happen accordingly. But the desire worked. He wanted, at least he couldn't be in the house, but at least he was near in the house. Sometimes Prabhupada said somebody becomes a cockroach due to his attachment to his house. He gets the birth of a cockroach and to stay in the house. He's in the house, but not as the lord of the house, but as a cockroach. Sometimes they become a mouse. Sometimes they become a snake and protect the house. Don't let anyone come. In old houses we find this kind of snakes that they guard the house. And so this poor guy is born in the neighborhood, near the house, as he desired, but he was born as a cobbler. Now in Indian culture, sometimes these lower class people are not treated very nicely. So he went to that house one day, and because he was a cobbler, his own son beat him up. But you are a mochi, you are a cobbler, why did you enter, how did you dare to enter in my house? So this is how we actually invite our misfortune and create all kinds of complexities for us individually and collectively, just because of our tendency to collect more than what we need. But the basic reality is that everything is there in abundance. Everything, especially if we lead a natural life, everything is there in abundance. There's plenty of food, there's plenty of water to drink. But the thing is, it's due to our greed that is causing the scarcity. This is also, Prabhupada pointed out, that the scarcity we notice is only in the human society. In the nature there is no scarcity, in any animal society, bird society and so forth. They get their food. Like an elephant needs a huge amount of food, maybe a few hundred kilos. But gets his daily bread, daily food. And an ant who needs just a grain of food, and gets that also. This is how Krishna's nature takes care of every living entity's needs. But man is not content. Man is not satisfied by just fulfilling his needs. He wants to have more. So greedy. Low lump, greed is causing all these problems. And because of the greed, he is accumulating so much. And that is causing scarcity for others. Krishna has given food for everybody. Now somebody, he accumulates so much food in his warehouse. He needs maybe 100, 200 grams of food every day, but he is accumulating hundreds of tons of food in his warehouse. Now where is that hundreds of tons of food coming from? It is coming from others' quota. He is stealing them from others' mouth and accumulating, and as a result of that there is scarcity. But if we live in nature, if we just submit ourselves to nature's arrangement, there won't be any scarcity. And man's greed is causing other kinds of scarcity, like not only scarcity of food, like although there is no scarcity of water generally, but the water is becoming polluted. As a result of that, there is not sufficient drinking water, and one has to buy drinking water. Like I remember when I was young, it was kind of considered that to sell water will lead into very bad karma. Because selling water was unthinkable. Because the nature's arrangement is there in abundance. And what you notice in India, in summertime, people, in order to acquire piety, they distribute water. They just open up, because it is considered that giving water is a form of piety. So, selling water is a sin. But today, everyone is selling water. Everyone is buying water. It's become part of our life. Why? Because of man's greed has created the scarcity in the society. All these things that are actually the bare necessities of life has been abundantly supplied by Krishna. But we are not satisfied with Krishna's arrangement. We are making artificial arrangements due to our greed. And at least now we are buying water, but we are not buying oxygen. Not as yet. But soon there will be.
There is. In some very polluted places, there's oxygen bars. Japan.
Right. Japan, Mexico.
Up in the higher elevations, in Colorado for years.
That is another thing, that's natural. You see, like when you go high up, the air becomes thinner and it becomes, actually, you know, oxygen is less, but the thing is that to breathe oxygen becomes difficult. That's why one has to carry oxygen. But in normal condition, Krishna made all the arrangements. Krishna made all the arrangements for all the food that we need. Regarding that also, Prabhupada once gave a very wonderful example. He took a prune and he held the seed in his hand. And he said, inside this seed, there is a tree. In that tree, there are innumerable fruits. And in each fruit, there are seeds. And in those seeds, there are trees. Each seed has a tree. And in those trees, there are innumerable fruits. So see what a wonderful arrangement Krishna has made. An endless supply. The arrangement Krishna has made. But we, in the name of our advancement, are destroying that arrangement. And as a result of that, there is so much suffering in society. So it's not only destroys our spiritual life, our greed, our endeavor to accumulate more than we need is destroying everything. The human society is in such a bad shape today because of our greed. Then Prajalpa, the third one, is Atyahar, Prayash, and then Prajalpa. Oh yeah, now to elaborate a little more on the Prayash, nothing comes easy in the nature. We have to struggle. But the struggle is only very, very limited, very simple, very little. For example, the seeds are given by Krishna. The fertility of the land is arranged by Krishna. Water has been arranged by Krishna. Right? But the farmer, now he simply tills the land. That act is actually a very insignificant part of the cultivation process. But he, because he makes a little endeavor, he gets the credit for the whole cultivation. Right? He gets the harvest. He gets the fruit of that endeavor. Now, tilling the land may be a little strenuous, but consider, if there was no rain, there won't be any any crop. If there was no sunshine, there won't be any crop. If there was no seed, there won't be any crop. Now Krishna made all these, and if the land was not fertile, there won't be any crop. So Krishna created the fertility of the land, Krishna has created the seeds, Krishna has created the water in the form of rain, and Krishna has arranged for the sunshine. And as a result of that, we are getting the seed falls on the ground and the plant comes out, and in the plant there are fruits or grains. So Krishna made all these arrangements. But if we don't accept those arrangements, rather, if we try to counteract those arrangements, naturally we are inviting trouble for ourselves. Rather, in Krishna consciousness, we should act just in an opposite way. Opposite way of the way the society is going today. Rather, depend upon nature, not depend upon the man's arrangements. Therefore, Prabhupada was so emphatic about self-sufficient communities. We have to define, at some point or other, we have to define the destructive arrangement that today's human society has created everywhere. So, the third one is Prajalpa. Prajalpa means gossip. We briefly discussed about this point yesterday. Like the art, the tendency to speak. Now this tendency to speak can be utilized in two ways. We can either speak sense or we can speak nonsense. So speaking nonsense will naturally lead to difficulties and distress and destroy our spiritual life. But speaking sense means speaking about Krishna. Jare dekho, tare kaho, Krishna. When you don't do that, then it becomes prajalpa. Speaking about all kinds of mundane things, all kinds of undesirable things, unwanted things. And janasangasya, janasangya means association of materialistic people. If we associate with materialistic people, what will be the result? They'll drag us down to their level. They will generate interest in doing things that they like to do. I'm noticing nowadays, everywhere, especially in India, maybe in other countries also, people have become so attached to frivolous games. Games like football, cricket, tennis. Like when I was in London at the time of when they were having the World Cup final. Last summer, World Cup in Germany. And there was no car in the street. The streets were empty. And London, like midday London is packed. Like you can't move because there's so much traffic. There's a saying that from one point to another point in the city, the time it used to take to go there for 100 years back, today also it takes the same time. 100 years back they were going on horse-drawn carts. The time it used to take from, I don't remember which point to which point. And today also it takes the same amount of time. Because there's so much traffic, you don't move. So that is London. But that day, it was completely bare, completely empty. And I wondered, what happened? And I was told, football World Cup final. So everyone is sitting at home. So they're just watching. So this is also another kind of prajalpa. Watching this game. Ultimately, what's the benefit? And then they talk about it. So this prajalpa is another detriment to spiritual progress. Not only a detriment to spiritual progress, it's a destroyer of the spiritual progress. Why is it? Wake him up. Sleeping there. You're sleeping? One thing. Don't sleep in the class.
Didn't intend to. Didn't intend to fall asleep.
I sleep, okay. That's why I woke you up. Prajalpa, then Niyama Agraha. Niyam means rules and regulations. There are different rules and regulations for our spiritual progress. When we take to spiritual life, we are meant to act in a certain way. And those, they are actually guiding us on the spiritual path. Now, too much attachment to those niyamas or the rules and regulations is detrimental to our spiritual progress. Or not to be at all interested in the spiritual activity is also another form of detriment. So, yes.
You can give like a practical example of too much attachment to rules, because if someone is having to study it, maybe becoming.
I see. Yeah, you see, too much attachment, actually what it means is that being, you know, too much caught up with just the externals, losing out, missing out on the essence of it. Like, sometimes we find that someone is too particular about certain things. Like he would put the tilak and he would take hours to gather, make it real nice, and he won't even he will use cloth and very systematically he will, you know, rub it off. But when it comes to going to Mangal Arati and attending the program, he is missing, right? Or he is very much caught up with the externals, like following simple practices. But when it comes to rendering devotional service, he is nowhere to be seen. He will wear his dhoti very meticulously. He will put his tilak very meticulously. But you ask him to render devotional service, he says, "Provide, I don't have any time. Ask somebody else to do it." Now the point is, what is important? Just this following these rules and regulations? Or getting the taste of spiritual life by being engaged in devotional service? Or somebody is not at all interested in following the rules and regulations. Like, he is expected to get up in the morning, but he doesn't. He is expected to attend the morning program. He does not. He is expected to associate with the devotees. Now these are the niyamas. But he is not interested in following that. So this niyamagraha means both the things. To be over enthusiastic about the external, just the superficial rules and regulations, but not being attracted to the process itself or the essence of devotional service itself, or not being interested at all in spiritual practices. So both of them are detrimental to spiritual growth. And Prajalpa, Niyamagraha, Janasangasya, all you discussed already, and Lollam, to become too greedy. Like Prabhupada is pointing out that this greed is also a result of Atyaha. When you try to accumulate more, this desire for accumulating more is actually the greed. So these six are detrimental to our spiritual progress. So what should we do? This is the beginning of Upadeshamrita. The instruction. In the first verse, Rupa Goswami pointed out what we have to do in order to become situated in this pure spiritual platform, to become pure devotee. But the instructions are actually beginning as a devotee what we should not do first. Then the next verse will be what we should do. This is what we should not do. We must avoid these activities if we are sincere about making spiritual progress. Now let's go into some discussions. Any points from you all that you would like to add, or any question? Yeah.
I want to ask about prayas in the spiritual life. Sometimes we are putting too much endeavors about spiritual goals. This is good or...
Yeah. You see, endeavor for spiritual upliftment is always beneficial. Like, these things are in relation to material things. Like, prayas, to make an endeavor for spiritual advancement is very good. But here, if the prayas is to accumulate the material things that we need for our sense gratification, that prayas is detrimental. But if you are endeavoring to distribute Prabhupada's books, that's the prayas. Now, will that be detrimental to your spiritual life? No. If you are trying to preach to people and going out of your way to make them into devotees, that's also a prayer, but that is spiritual prayer. That will be beneficial for your spiritual advancement. Now here, these six detriments are material involvement of these six ways. Yeah.
Kind of connected with his question, and sometimes we could see that devotee takes too much service, and this breaks him down. He loses the faith. And first, he loses the health or the rounds, and then the faith.
Yeah. Away. Well, then I have to say that his prayas is material. That taking too much service is not really for the sake of pleasing Krishna. Because if it was pleasing Krishna, then this prayer should have made him advance in spiritual life. But probably he was doing it for the sake of name and fame, for recognition. That's why he loses taste. Because he makes a big endeavor, but when he doesn't get the recognition, then he gets frustrated, disappointed. But when if he is doing it for Krishna, then there won't be any problem. Like the example is Arjuna is fighting the battle. But was Arjuna disappointed and giving up at the end? No. Arjuna was, more he was doing it, the more he was feeling inspired to do that. So when it's for Krishna, then there, in devotional life, there is no loss or diminution. Yes, Hari Hari.
Yes, we are having these translations from Sanskrit to English in the books. They're clear. Why are we laying emphasis on the Sanskrit again? Because some of us...
Emphasis on?
I said we have this Sanskrit language translated into English. We all did.
Yes.
And it is clear for us to continue learning the
subject matter.
Subject matter.
Yeah.
Now, going back to lay emphasis on Sanskrit, it looks somehow difficult for me, but
yeah. Well, that's how Prabhupada did that. Prabhupada wanted us to learn Sanskrit. But also, Prabhupada didn't want us to learn Sanskrit. Right? Once I told Prabhupada that I wanted to learn Sanskrit, Prabhupada asked, why? So I was giving the reasons. And Prabhupada continued, why? Then finally Prabhupada told me that our business is not to become a scholar, Sanskrit scholar, pandit. Our business is to preach. There are so many scholars, Sanskrit scholars, but what they are doing. But at the same time, Prabhupada wanted us to learn especially for the sake of preaching, he wanted us to learn Sanskrit. And I tell you, it was so effective. It is so effective. Like the early days, you know, like most of our devotees were Americans and Europeans. And they were preaching in India. Or even outside to the Indians. And I can tell you for myself, you know, when I first joined, there was one devotee, Satadhanya, he was a sannyasi, and he was reciting the verses from Bhagavad. He was speaking to me, and from time to time he was reciting the verses from Bhagavad Gita. He was quoting verses from Bhagavad Gita. And I was thinking, he is so learned. I was really thinking that he memorized the entire Bhagavad Gita. Later on I found out that he knew only 5 or 6 verses. But he applied it in such a way, applied them in such a way that it sounded like he is an expert in Sanskrit language. So for the sake of preaching, and because, you know, ultimately our root is Sanskrit. Sanskrit is the original human language, actually. The original language is Sanskrit. All the other languages came from Sanskrit. You see, originally, there was only one culture, one civilization, Vedic culture. Brahma and the creation started, and the human beings were all offsprings of Manu. Later on, you see, it became, the human society became fragmented. And they, becoming isolated from the original culture, they developed some, you know, apparently the culture became different. But at the root, you will see they're all the same, coming from Sanskrit. And so older language you go to, you will see that, like for example, Latin is so close to Sanskrit. And you can also see German is so close to Sanskrit. Actually, German language is considered to be coming from Sanskrit. They call it Indo-Germanish. The root of German language is Indo, which is Sanskrit. Russian is so close to Sanskrit. Apparently we won't be able to see them, but you know, those who know both Russian and Sanskrit will see that there is such link. So ultimately we all came from one source. We all came from Brahma. Right? We all came from, our human beings came from Manu and Satyagopa. So since it is our culture, you know, Vedic culture is our culture, human culture, so it is good to go into the root. And because Another thing is, anyway, since I said because, let me explain this point. Because it gives us the awareness, right, that what is actually, where it is coming from. Like when we quote a Sanskrit verse, it's not coming from you or me. It's coming from, you know, Brahma or Krishna himself. Bhagavad Gita is the words of Krishna. So when you're quoting, you're actually quoting Krishna. And then it becomes easier to explain, because then you got the essential understanding. And then you're just elaborating. You quote a verse, right? You got the point. What are you going to speak about? That's why memorizing the verses help. You just, you know, like, while you're preaching to people, it's not that you quote to impress them, but by quoting a verse, it becomes clear to us. It's like, you know, remembering some formula and then applying the formula.
But there's also some disadvantage. In course of distributing books, some people complain to me that they don't understand the other language. They just leave that one, just read the English version. You know, it causes some confusion to those who are reading our books.
Okay, I understand your point. But one thing is that, you see, Prabhupada wrote these books for thousands of years to come. Today people may be, you know, because of their ignorance of the language and the culture, they may feel that, well, I don't need the Sanskrit part of it. Just the language that I understand, that will be sufficient. But a time will come when people will go deep into it. Right? And for them, you see, the Sanskrit verses, Sanskrit transliteration and word for word meaning will become very, very important. Can you imagine if someday these books, or not if someday, when someday, these books become the textbooks? Right? They are systematically studying it. Don't you think they'll need it? So that is how, you see, we have to understand that Prabhupada didn't write these books just for, you know, 20, 30 years or even 100, 200 years. Prabhupada wrote these books for 10,000 years to come. And with that foresight, you know, Prabhupada has presented it the way he did it. Yes, Vasudev Prabhu.
On this and then I have a question. It's like all the songs, the Sanskrit songs we sing. So maybe in the beginning we don't know what we're singing, but after some years we do. We go deeper into the language. And the thing is, when we come to Mayapur, from all over the world, people sing the same song. We have the same song. It's like we have one language.
Very, very good point.
I also had a comment when you were speaking about football in Germany and England. This reminded me of New Delhi in the mid-80s when I remember this one day I went out and there was no one in the street. So then I saw a group of about 100 people. So I went there to ask what's going on. And I saw they were all completely captivated by a small, little, tiny black and white TV screen. And they were watching
Ramayana
saga.
Yeah,
I remember that. And in Ahmedabad.
So it was very inspiring to see how still it's renowned.
But India has changed in the last 20 years. You know, like those days there was only one TV channel. And now there are hundreds of TV channels. And, you know, rarely one or two TV channels, you know, once in a while, they show some Ramayana or Mahabharata, some religious thing. The rest of the time is, you know, CNN, not even CNN, what's these movie channels and all kinds of, you know, Western channels, you know, degrading the society so bad. Like, it was not so much. Anyway, they must have been fascinated by Ramayana and Mahabharata to some extent. But it is the novelty of TV also. You know. But now they are losing losing the taste. And another thing is that they watch those things mostly as an entertainment. You know, it is, they have their religious, you know, religious attachment to some extent, or they used to have maybe 20 years back. But, you know, like, it was, that was driven by the novelty or the entertainment feature of it, you know. And now that it's so available so abundantly, you know, they don't care.
It didn't make them surrender to
Krishna. Yeah, that's the point. And it didn't actually, if it was really, if they were really interested in spiritual life, then, you know, the world would have been, at least India would have been different today. But it's not. They're degrading very fast. India is degrading very fast. I mean, I'm seeing in front of my eyes, you know. Like when I was young, you know, very few people used to drink alcohol. Few people were actually non-vegetarian. Very few people used to gamble. And prostitution, you know, you cover your ears. But now it has become a common thing. Like practically everyone is a meat eater in India now. Practically, you know, drinking alcohol is a part of life. And, yeah. So, you know, the world is degrading very fast. And this, you know, very advanced media presentation is kind of making things even worse.
One may have thought that, you know, when you come in contact with Krishna consciousness, or when Srila Prabhupada was here, that, you know, like Maya would actually disappear and the Lord Chaitanya's mercy would flood the whole world. But as you're saying, you can see some things happening which, that it's, in the words of Ramana Swami, he says, it's not heavy, it's gone beyond heavy, you know, what's going on in the world. And I was wondering if you comment, what could we, you know, is this heading towards a Krishna conscious conclusion?
I'm sure Krishna has his plan, but we don't know how the plan will unfold. But Mahaprabhu said, every town and village, it will happen. So it will happen. But how it will happen, when it will happen, we don't know. But at least we can see that things are moving in a positive direction. Like, Srila Prabhupada came, brought Krishna consciousness to the rest of the world. Then Prabhupada is, you know, made this ISKCON institution, established in such a way, structured it so wonderfully. So these are all positive signs. But if you compare to ISKCON's achievement and the degree of degradation that the world is going through, I mean, we are nowhere in saving the world. We are nowhere near saving the world. Right? I mean, it's so overwhelming, the degradation of this world. Like, we don't really know how to do it. And considerably, ISKCON, you know, like, in one hand, the world is becoming very degraded by the degraded means Kali's influence is spreading in leaps and bounds. He's actually winning. If we consider that Mahaprabhu and Kali, right, these are the two, you know, heads, right, the leader, the heads of two armies. Mahaprabhu's kingdom, Kali's kingdom, right? Mahaprabhu's influence, Kali's influence. Now Kali's influence is spreading, you know, in an incredible way. Like every day it is becoming more and more degraded. Or if you take the statistics, you know, the condition that was 5 years back And 5 years hence, you can see that there is such massive advancement of Kali. Whereas we, the followers of Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu's army, you know, we are gradually, you know, like the, as I was explaining the other day, after Prabhupada's disappearance, when Prabhupada was here, ISKCON was, you know, really soaring high. But after Prabhupada's disappearance, gradually, you know, things went down. And now gradually things are coming up. But the progression upwards is relatively very, very slow. But Chaitanya, I mean, ultimately, who are we fighting for, and who is the country? Who is in control? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in control, and he will make arrangements. You know, he is preparing the ground, right? And that's why Prabhupada was so emphatic about distributing books, like let the books go out. And when people will read those books, you know, they will become affected by that. When they will read the books, we don't know. They may not become a devotee right after getting the book. But these books are planted in different corners of the world, in different strategic places. You know, and the books will fall in some person's hand and he'll become a devotee. So these arrangements have been made, but yet we do not know how this battle will be won. But we know we will win. So for example, before, if you read Mahabharata, the condition before the battle of Kurukshetra, you know, it was obvious. I mean, it seemed obvious that the Pandavas had no chance to win. You know, Kaurav's army was so powerful. You know, such, you know, great warriors on their side. The numerically, the number was much greater than the Pandavas' army. So, you know, like, by number they outnumbered, you know, by power they're, you know, with the heroes, you know, they're out, overshadowed. You know, like, at the beginning you can see that, you know, Pandavas don't have any chance. That's why Duryodhana was so confident that he's going to win the war, in the battle. But then we see how Krishna acted. Bhishma was invincible. Bhishma was practically immortal. He was there, you know, he was the general. You know, who is going to kill Bhishma? Who is going to defeat Bhishma? Just one obstacle was practically impossible to overcome. Now what to speak of, you know, Karna? You know, what to speak of Jayadrath? What to speak of Shalva? You know, like, I mean, all these, you know, Ashwatthama, Drona, you know, no chance of winning. But at the end of the battle, what do we see? Krishna's divine arrangement. The Pandavas won the battle. So similarly, we simply have to loyally remain in Mahaprabhu's side and continue with our mission. Victory will be ours. We may be here to see it or we may not be here to see it. That doesn't matter. But we will see, whether from here or from there. We are going to win because we are with Krishna. We are with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes, Maharaj, our victory will be only for the next 10,000 years, if we suffer 2,000 years, things will get so bad that there will be no more religion, right?
That's so, what you think.
Well, that's what Mahaprabhu said.
Okay, but consider possibilities. See, what to speak of 10,000 years? In 1 year's time, there can be a war, right? And, you know, human civilization, all that man has built will be destroyed in just a few days, or maybe in a few hours. When Otto Hahn, you know, was asked, who was the scientist who behind the atom bomb? So when they experimented the atom bomb, they asked him, and how the Third World War will be fought. And his reply was that, I do not know how the third one will be fought, but I know how the fourth one will be fought. You know what he said? It will be fought with sticks and spears. Sticks and spears. The civilization, you know, like, it's only a matter of time. This, what they have created, will just collapse. Like a house of cards. Just, you know, collapse. And then what? Then human being will start from the scratching.
What I understood was things we get a list from now on, 10,000 years, and after that.
No, actually, the prediction is that for 10,000 years, Satyayuga will be established in the middle of Kali Yuga. Satyayuga will be established for 10,000 years in the middle of Kali Yuga.
Right.
Although we are in Kali Yuga, the most degraded age, but for 10,000 years, Satyayuga will be established. Huh? Dharma will become perfectly established. In this age, in the middle of this age. So dharma being perfectly established means what? It will become like the way it was during Parikshit Maharaj's time. No one was indulging in meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex and gambling. And everyone is spiritually situated. Either devotees chanting Hare Krishna or following Varnashram. And how it will happen, I don't know. Whether it will come after destruction, total destruction, massive destruction, or whether it will come through as a gradual change, that we have to see. And Prabhupada said that the world war would have taken place long ago, but because of this movement, that is not happening. Like, consider all the deadly weapons they have created. Like, why they are not using it? Isn't it a surprise? And they are deadly against each other. You know, like, I mean, they are practically on each other's throat. They would prefer, they would love to annihilate the other person, other force. But it's not happening. Why? It's a surprise. But why? Because Mahaprabhu's movement is growing. This is the hope for this world. The only hope for this world. Hare Krishna.
We have a greatest science with us. Like, we're going to build a new temple, show the whole creation, everything. Don't you think we should have like a TV channel of our own? So like, this is the time we attack them.
We should have so many things of our own. We should have our own country. We should have our own government. But it will happen. It will happen in the course of time. Okay, any other question? Yes.
Pandava was still confident because Krishna was on their side. You can follow maybe follow their mood.
Right, right. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in whose side? He is on our side. So that's why we are bound to win. We can roll up our sleeves and challenge Kali. Come Kali, let's have a bout. Let's see how strong you are. It will happen. In course of time it will happen. There will be confrontation. I'll take this question.
There's one story in the Bible pertaining to how they were trying to build a temple, Pinnacle to heaven.
Tower of Babel.
Yeah.
So when I go for preaching, when people ask me which language is this, so I used to tell them about that story, that in the world before they were speaking, in the old world they were speaking one language, and that language was the language they were speaking before they were trying to build the pinnacle. And then after the God destroyed the pinnacle, and people, they could not hear, they could not understand themselves again. So people start speaking different languages. So I want to ask now, is there any story related to that in the Vedas where they were speaking one language before, and suddenly everybody could not understand themselves again and start speaking different languages?
I don't think it happened just all of a sudden. It happened gradually. It happened gradually because the world became isolated. The way Prabhupada described it, you see, previously this earth planet was one country. And the entire earth planet was actually one country under one ruler. Right? And there were subordinate rulers, but on top there was only one ruler who was ruling the entire planet. But then as people started to deviate from the Vedic culture, they became separated. They started to become separated. And in this way, the Vedic culture started to get lost. And mind you, it happened only about 5,000, less than 5,000 years ago. When Parikshit Maharaj was the ruler of this planet, when Parikshit Maharaj was present, he was ruler of the entire earth planet. So even 5,000 years ago, it was just one ruler ruling over the entire planet. Right? So, if there is one government ruling over one planet, how many cultures will be there? There will be one culture. How many languages will be there? One language. But, you know, it all happened practically in last 5,000, more or less last 5,000 years. There are certain areas which they became isolated, and they developed a different culture because they deviated from the Vedic culture. And now let us consider, if Krishna consciousness movement starts to spread, aren't we seeing what is happening? Like, say, for example, like generally English is the language of ISKCON, of Krishna consciousness movement. And you go to any country, devotees speak English. At least they learn to speak English. Like in France, you know, they hate English. Like, even if they know English, they will not speak in English. Even as a foreigner, you go and ask in English, they will pretend as if they don't know. They don't understand. It's so puffed up. They think that everybody should speak French. But if you go to our temples in France, the Bhagavatam classes are given in English, the devotees are speaking in English. So they are overcoming all these material barriers. Similarly, go to Russia, they are learning English. Other countries, at least the Western world, English became quite predominant. But the Eastern Bloc was completely cut off. They never had anything to do with English. But now, because of ISKCON, they are speaking English. So, as ISKCON spreads, what will happen? First they learn English, then they learn Sanskrit, and then they learn Bengali. Because Prabhupada's writings are generally in English, people will naturally want to read Prabhupada's writing in original. Then people would like to learn Sanskrit because the verses are in Sanskrit, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. And then when they come to Chaitanya Charitamrita, they learn Bengali. And especially when they see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke that language and we are his followers, we would like to learn the language. Things will change, and it doesn't take much time. It's what if, you know, if you're in the right consciousness, if you develop the right attitude, it will happen very quickly. Yes, sorry, Prabhu.
There's an example in history of Christianity was that when it first started, it was very unpopular.
Right. That's true, yeah.
There's a crazy now, it's very, it's up there, it's fanatics, misled. Now it's a very popular religion. Also, I was thinking about.
And it took only 2,000 years.
Yeah. Like this thing about what's happening in Kazakhstan, how we have the sympathy of the world.
Right.
And that's a bit, you know, so great.
We'll be much better. We're much better off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like when there was this thing that happened quite a few years ago on Jonestown or something in Guyana. And then they lumped us in with this, some cultist group, Christianity group, they committed suicide. The whole group.
Oh, okay. Right.
And then the Time magazine,
Jonestown.
Yeah. And they lumped us in with as like them. You know, that we're a similar type of. Now, you know, we're getting grasped by some government and. And we're getting some publicity, and people are feeling, wow, why are they doing that? You know, so it's, sometimes bad things can lead to good.
Right, that's true. And we also have to admit, the world is a lot more civilized than it was before. Like, you know, I mean, democracy at least brought in some good things. You know? Like, you know, like we have the. Different institutions, different organizations, you know, who take care of the, who kind of come to the rescue of the minority groups or downtrodden.
They put pressure on these countries.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And about Kazakhstan, it's becoming a big issue now because they are, Kazakhstan is trying to come to the EC, European Community.
Yeah.
And they are now, they are actually questioning, you know, like if that is your attitude, if this is your religious stand, then, you know, forget it. You know. Like, just a small little temple has been destroyed. And not even a temple, actually. They broke some houses. And look at the kind of appeal from the, all over the world that we are, that is generated. Hare Krishna. Yes,
you can confirm if it's true or not, but I heard a long time ago about that saying, in the beginning they will laugh at us, then they will persecute us,
yeah.
And in the end they will love us.
Yeah, that's true.
We see them laughing and then persecution.
And persecution actually hasn't begun as yet.
Well, they're not powerful.
They're not powerful. No, Prabhupada said that because they don't recognize our power or what is this movement meant to do to this world. The moment they recognize that, you know, they'll try to destroy this movement. They'll go all out because, you know, this means the end of their culture.
Prabhupada said also there's almost this was made. On four principles.
The biggest businesses are actually breaking the principles.
They're based on that.
Right, based on that. You want to be a successful businessman?
Yeah.
Try it out with one of the four simple activities.
Prabhupada also said if the leaders of the world knew what I was talking about, they would kill me.
Right. So we're already over time. Thank you very much. Glory to you.